listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, September 11th, 2019. My name is Michael Kelly, and I am here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael. Glad to be here.
And the Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit as well as to explore science and spirituality. And in addition to this program, ICMH also has several other educational programs, including the metaphysicsinstitute.org, that offers bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in many different metaphysical fields. Now, of course, before we get into tonight's topic, we're going to begin with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. And those are: 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, and one destiny. Always one to keep in mind. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. Now, those listening to our broadcast elsewhere can find out more about metaphysical humanism at metaphysicalhumanism.org. So, tonight, I think last week we had such a great time talking, well, such a good discussion talking about transitions. It was a fascinating topic, and we had so much to explore. I think we're going to go to part 2 tonight. And Dr. Hunter, I'm going to turn it over to you to do all the talking and generate all the content for this evening.
Oh, yeah. Put it on me. Actually, we were talking before the program, and Michael has some great things he wants to address tonight, too. So don't put that all on me, Michael. But to get us started, I dug up this post that was flying around Facebook, and, you know, Facebook, I know, but I really like it. September 9th, you know, a couple of days ago, this is what it says. 999 karmic energy portals now open, and over the next 9 days until 9/18/19, when Saturn retrograde ends, karma from the past 9 months will be repaid and cleared. No, okay, we could talk about the word karma in a minute, but I think it's just a correction is more the word we want to use. So it reads, old situations, memories, and people from the past may surface. Release all regrets, nostalgic tension, and obsessive thoughts. Cycles will complete, and challenging chapters will finally close. Hard work, positive action, and kind deeds will be fully rewarded. Good and bad intentions will be repaid, and all karmic energy reset. Focus on letting go of all toxicity and trust. Open up and receive. So we were in that 999. Now we're coming into a full moon Friday, which is Friday the 13th of all things. I love Friday the 13th myself. But it's a big transitional time. Here's what I think. It gives optimism. However we read how the planets are aligning, it gives a sense of optimism. It gives us an idea for change. But to kind of look at the word karma for a moment, when, you know, some people think that when, you know, not very many nice things are happening or times are rough, they say, what did I do? What was my karma? You know, is this my karma? Or I'm going to, you know, kind of look for abundance and get good karma. It's that belief that there's this instant karma, if you will. And I'm, you know, Wendy's saying she thinks it's a good karma for it's good karma for this week too. But understand what karma is. It's a law of cause and effect, action, reaction. That's scientifically a law of physics. That's what that is. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be an automatic, you know, cause and effect. You're not going to see an automatic result unless you've said something really, really bad to somebody and you turn around and trip over the curb. That could be instant karma.
If I'm not mistaken, the original concept of karma comes from the Hindu belief system, wherein the good deeds of this life really aren't even felt until the next life.
Yes.
Much later.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's, but I think New Age is kind of
the modern vernacular, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of stretched that concept a little bit and then narrowed it down to serve us in some way. And I think that this is my fear, that sometimes we've gotten carried away with this, the same as the savior syndrome, wanting somebody to save you. It's like, I really hope karma bites you. And, you know, automatic, or where's my good karma and my savior? So it's just a caution with that, especially when we're in transition, whether it's our personal or social. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Whether it's cultural or even global and universal. So there's all these layers of transitions that occur. But in being very careful, I think, careful in this karma thing, where we don't buy into that a little bit too much, you know, because karma doesn't, that cause and effect doesn't always come right now when we want it. I mean, I've been buying a lotto ticket thinking this has got to be my karma. It's not necessarily happening, but other good things happen in other small ways. So we each have our own ride and so on. Wendy says, yeah, I believe there's instant karma, karma that catches up with people. You know, and again, it's a belief system, instant karma. Of course, John Lennon, his famous song about instant karma. But I think possibly there's more psychology to that, Wendy. I don't mean to burst a bubble, but you know, so many things going on in our neural pathways and our unconscious, subconscious minds that, you know, we see it as karma when really it's just an action reaction because we created that. So we have to be a little bit careful. Karma catches up with people. I think what Michael's mentioned about the belief system of other lifetimes and other things. So we have to look at, you know, what we take with us in our soul's journey, if we believe that. Yeah, I think everything catches up with people eventually, but doesn't mean they're going to realize it. So I think karma has to be a realization also.
Let me throw this out there, and it's very off topic, so I kind of apologize, but I'll say this. This is just random thought. I don't really hold this as a close belief, because I've always been open to the possibility of reincarnation in their lives. I believe very much that it's possible that other people have experiences that can be verified. I don't know if it's connection to a global consciousness or whatnot. But I was remarking the other day to a friend that I just feel old, you know, older than my years. And I always have. And I feel like I've just done this before. And I don't have any past life memories. I remember nothing from any existence. I don't remember anything from, I don't know, basically until I was five, but I've always had that sense of, you know, age and history. And you might say that karma is what we carry with us in a lot of ways. And if we do bad things to bad people, it creates bad energy within us, and we carry that with us. And perhaps we carry it into the next phase of existence. We might not remember exactly why, but we carry the heavy burden of those bad acts, or the joy and the pride and the hope that good acts bring as well. Just a thought I'm throwing out there.
I don't think it's off topic at all, Michael. I think transition, it's all in the topic of transition. And what I see that too, and you talk about being like an old soul or you've been here before, I think it's that your soul is awake. Your soul stayed awake and had insight into life, or that you brought with you an awake sense of soul, if that makes sense, in a way.
Sounds good.
So you don't have to carry with you the actual memories of events of other lifetimes, but there's an awake sense of knowing that someone brings with them. You know, some people are just born awake. And, it's like I kind of know this place. I know what's going on. So it makes perfect sense to me. So bringing it into transition this is an interesting thing, because I think when a soul is awake, but you're learning how to be human, like you have a big picture, you have a bigger insight, but how do I put that into effect? Like, what do I do with life while I'm here? Because it's like being a soul in a body. Okay, now what?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And so there's so many things you could do, but what steps will you take that will keep in line with a path that's good for you, or a natural path in whatever that is for your life? So I like to take a universal look at this, that it applies to anyone in any circumstance on the planet. Do you see? So there's a lot of people in great suffering who are also awake, and they don't know what to do, you know. So how do we then create intent to bring change? And I think perhaps one of the most difficult things is that we want big change rather than understanding every small change contributes to the big change, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And in addition, I'd like to mute my microphone while I clear my throat. And I'd also like to address a couple of things I saw in chat. Wendy had referenced earlier, when I was speaking to the things that we do in life, we carry with us. And she asked, as in guilt. Not exactly what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking more about, because guilt is, it's a tricky thing, because most people think of guilt and they think of, you know, it's this burden that weighs on them and they just beat themselves up, and oftentimes it's undeserved. What I'm speaking more to is when you have significant events happen in your life, they change you and they become a part of you. And our history is much of who we are, and we carry that through with us. And I was kind of remarking that that imprint is left on the soul, and it changes who we are. It adds to our experience, the texture of our existence. Guilt, you know, is a very tricky thing. It's kind of a, well, we can have remorse. We can have look back and think, well, knowing now what I know now, I might have done things differently, but I will use that information to do things differently going forward. But there are some things that we just carry with us in life that and we don't have to do it in an unhealthy way, but it becomes part of who we are, and we learn from it, and it forever changes the path and trajectory of our life forever after. And that was really what I was getting at, more so than guilt. And I'd also like to point out that Dr. Angie had put in reincarnation or cell memory, which is an interesting topic I'd love to get into sometime, the notion that we actually have, you know, some sort of memory that goes through DNA in cells. And she said, where's Fran? And Fran is, you know, a member of the church and the organization. She's a great person, and, you know, had been with us in the live broadcast a lot. And we haven't seen her a little bit, and we miss her, and we hope she comes back, and we'd love to have her with us. But some really interesting things going, you know, talking about in chat.
You know, that's what I appreciate so much about the chat and being live, that we can interact with people. We have a great group and new people joining all the time, which, you know, people come and go, and that's, I think that's awesome, and glad to have you all here, because we're all in a transition of our own. you know, even whether it's the radio program or, you know, our daily lives. You know, so it's to keep the energy, as we say, always moving forward and taking an interest in each other, supporting each other as we go through changes. But intentional support, and this is something that you brought up before the program, Michael, intentional transitions. Maybe you can elaborate a little bit more on what you were thinking in that regard.
Well, there are times where a catalyst, either it's a catalyst created by our increased awareness or a catalyst created by life happening to us, forces a change, and we need to change, and sometimes we are fortunate to be able to choose the path that we take. We know we have to change something, but we can decide what it is, and that's kind of a purposeful transition. Say something happens, you lose your job. It might seem devastating at first, but perhaps this is the catalyst you need to make a purposeful, deliberate change in your life that maybe you've just been waiting for, to go into follow your dream, follow your passion, you know, and you might find that this initially traumatic or, you know, anxiety-inducing event just happened to be the best thing that could have happened. Also, recognizing through increased awareness things that we need to change about ourselves and being deliberate about the transitions from old behaviors to new behaviors. And that's really what I was talking about with that kind of deliberate transition.
You know, my grandma would say that's a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
When things change.
That's right.
But I think, and you're right, you know, when we know we have to change something and we focus in on where we want to be, and then to back up. And I know we addressed this a little bit, you know, last week, but it's to take a small step to be deliberate. But sometimes things seem so big and they seem so way out of our realm to make an intentional change. So it's really about, okay, what can I do today that's even the smallest change that helps to strengthen myself? And I found that the stronger we are, the more self-complete we are, the less intimidating a transition or change is that we want to have. Because it's all about fear, right? Because we don't know where to go. We want the change, but we don't know how to get from here to there. And it's so overwhelming and out of my scope. But the stronger I am, and the more I let go of the past, of course, but the stronger I am, then I can take a step forward and it doesn't seem so scary. Sometimes we get pushed over the cliff, you know, you lose your job, you have the things, it's like, whoa, it's falling into an abyss. And, so that's where the blessing in disguise. But the actual focus of deciding, I know when I've made changes in my life, I really had to get to the end of my rope where I was, you know, and really ask myself, why am I here? And then say, oh, I got to change this. Okay, now what? Well, I have no idea what's on the other side of, you know, what's on the grass is greener on the other side. Well, I was wondering, what's on the other side of that road? Or what's on the other side of that border that I didn't even know existed? And that's an interesting place to be. I know when I first moved out to British Columbia, I'd been in Alberta for a better part of my life, but it was minus 48, and my kids are grown and gone. I'm on my own, on an acreage, horses, you know, geese, chickens, I got the works. But it's minus 48. I'm walking across back to the house in the field, and I stopped in the middle of the field, and I looked up and I said, what am I doing here? And it was like that moment of, oh, I don't need to be here. Like, it's like where I am at this moment is not the pleasure it used to be.
Yeah.
And it was that, then all the layers of thinking, you know, I got in the house and warmed up and I think I'm, where am I going to go? Well, you know, I think I'm going to go to BC. My oldest is living out here, my grandkids. And I said, hey, everybody, how would you like mom to come there?
Yeah.
So And, you know, they were wonderful. It's like, what are the logistics then of moving a whole farm? Whoa, you know. But it's one little thing at a time, and things started to fall into place. But it's a very intentional decision of, I can't be here anymore, so I must get somewhere else and to take that step. It's like focusing on it. And it, I don't know how to explain it. It's just a knowing, and it's just to follow that. You know, you follow your intuition, you follow your instincts, you follow that little voice. People talk about it, you know, about that, the little voice told me. To be honest, it was that little voice that told me to join IMHS in the first place, you know, going back 8.5 years or so. But I had a little voice in my head that said, hey, you go online, check this out. And I think that's a little bit different than, you know, the actual decision to sign up. Okay, the voice got me there, but I actually have to follow through with an action. So it's a deliberate intent. And the one that Dr. Kelly, you know, often refers to in the studies is, what is that deliberate intent? So it's an intentional transition. I hope I didn't go too long about that, Michael, but I want to say that.
Yeah, I think that was a great point. And, you know, one thing, we talked about transitions in a lot of different ways. And one thing that we haven't really, we touched on it, but we haven't really delved into is, as a people, as the human race, the transitions that we go through and the societal transitions.
Big subject, yeah.
And I would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge a pretty immense transition on September the 11th, 2001. You know, we had a tragedy in the United States of an attack, and thousands were killed, and we remember those that were lost, and we remember those that were lost in the conflicts that ensued as well, because it was a transition for the world and for us. And it's moments like that that will invite transition onto other people that they didn't ask for. Just like the poor souls in the Bahamas that recently underwent a horrible tragedy where, you know, thousands missing, feared dead, you know, our thoughts are with them. And, you know, anything that can be done, you know, such as donating to the Red Cross or other programs that are springing up to help these people that have suffered are very virtuous and great things to do. And, you know, we keep them in our thoughts and we do what we can to help how we can, when we can.
But, well, you know, these are moments that we know life will never be the same. I think most people know where they were on 9/11. When that happened. I can recite it exactly like yesterday, because it's such a powerful, impactful moment. And then again, storms like the Bahamas, everybody, like, this is one of the biggest storms in history. I think a lot of people, especially in North America, because that storm went right up to the Maritimes in Canada, we know where we are at that moment. And you remember, back in 1987, there was that was the year my son was born. There was a huge tornado that ripped through the city that I lived in Edmonton, Alberta, and just wiped out. Oh, it was devastating. And you remember those moments where socially and societally are so significant that it changes people. It changes the collective. And in the case of 9/11, I think that changed people, not just in the Western world, but I think everyone globally. Many countries are accustomed to, and I hate to say that because it just sounds so terrible, accustomed to dissent, you know, but the United States or North America was kind of a hands-off. And so I think it's the first time that kind of catastrophic event occurred. So these are moments that we have to change ourselves. Like, we have to. Well, we have no choice.
It's,
but how are we going to do that?
Well, right. I mean, nobody asks for these things to happen. Well,
exactly.
In the sense of the victims that have to suffer these things, nobody asked for this. Nobody wanted this. You know, and people have to deal with the consequences, and they also have to deal with the aftermath of these tragedies and these horrific events that will occur, have occurred and will happen in the future because of the nature of existence. And who are we going to be? How are we going to come together? Are we going to be the best of ourselves? Are we going to help? Like I said, Dr. Angie is making mention of the fact that there are many animals that are also, you know, suffering in the Bahamas. And I'm sorry they don't have any a list of any charities offhand. That would have been a good idea to have. But I have heard of organizations that are specifically trying to make sure that shelters in the area are getting some resources to help those animals that are abandoned. As well as you can probably find them online by Googling them. Just make sure you do your research. And, of course, the Red Cross is doing a lot of great work in the area, so you can go there and donate. But it's how are we going to come together? How are we going to manage this transition? And who are we going to be as a people? How are we going to deal with this?
Well, this is where we individually choose who am I. You decide who am I and what am I going to be here? And how am I going to contribute to the community? And in what way? So, you know, you pick your cause kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really about not just in how are we going to respond courageously, mm-hmm. bravely? Are we going to rise up to a challenge, or are we going to live in fear?
Exactly.
And hope it never happens to us, you know?
We can't just sit back and wait for others to do mm-hmm. for us what we should be doing. We have to be an active participant in this world, and we can't just assume that the people that need help are always going to get it. We can't assume that the good guys are always going to win, or the good people. Let's be gender neutral here, but we can't just assume. We have to be an active participant in this world to shape it and to help manage these transitions on a societal level.
Yeah,
we're not. None of us are singularly in control of the world, but we are all members. We are all citizens of this earth. We are all one race on one planet, and we all have ultimately one destiny, and that's worth remembering.
You know, thank you for that, Michael. It's a well put, and of course, in the 9 principles of belief. I'd like to throw in, there is some activity in the chat here, and for people, you know, listening to the archives later, Dr. Angie said one lady took in 100 dogs in her home. I saw that story. That was remarkable. Everything in the lower level was flooded. She had animals upstairs, and, you know, it was quite a mess, but it was how she was saving them. And then eventually getting some help too. And it's really interesting to me how there's always, you know, that small group of people who seem to be most extraordinary when the real chips are down. And I say that these are the people who are least acquisitional, if you don't mind me saying that. And these are the people who are generally, in my view, the least attached to their money and the stuff, who are living life and have this focus on humanity. And it's the love of humanity and the love of people, which we as metaphysicians, that's our philosophy, that we're up to that challenge that, you know, your house doesn't matter. You know, all the other things don't matter. What matters is how we interact with each other and how we regard all life on earth. And we are all in this together. And those extraordinary people who example that, I like to believe other people saying, it would be Dr. Angie, she would be taking in the animals, so would Wendy. You know, I like to believe I would be doing that also. I don't know about 100, but, you know, it depends, whatever, but I'd be taking in the people, like, who cares about stuff? Stuff doesn't matter. We live in a big fire zone out here in British Columbia, and we've had our shares of huge catastrophes when it comes to that. And how people step up when people are, you know, they've had to flee their homes and some losing their homes, and how people step up to help. It's really extraordinary. And, you know, you can put yourself on a list, by the way, in your community to be a volunteer in the event of, natural disasters or so now you don't even have to be part of a committee. You can be part of, I know in this community, friends of mine are, I don't know why I haven't done it yet, but because I'm through them, I'd be happy to help. They know that. But they have their doors open. They have their homes. They go and volunteer. So they have their names on the list. People need a place. You can come here. So there are things that we can do, even if it's in your own area, not just a matter of sending money if you don't have it, but being inclusive in your own community and, you know, being resilient in that way. And I think it's all from the heart, to be honest. Yeah. And when you live from the heart, you are up for the challenge. Yeah. And somehow in our cellular memory, we know what to do. And even in a moment of helplessness, we know to ask, what can I do? You know, and that's where our courage lives. And I think that's it's at a soul level. I believe that.
We're all human. I mean, yeah, it's the humanism and metaphysical humanism. I mean, we are all the human animal. We are built with these similar traits. We find strength and community in each other. And that is because of who we are as human beings. And we have immense potential because of that strength, because of that community. Yeah. And we will have immense strength and we will have immense possibility in a bright future if we come together, if we do not allow ourselves to be divided. We have to come together as a people under reasoning with purpose to, again, make this world a better place and to do good things. And we do it, you know, one group at a time, one broadcast like this, one chat room, one, you know, group of friends, group of colleagues, group of people talking, discussing ideas, and time after time, day after day, these things happen. They build, they grow, and the world changes.
It does. Like it or not, folks, it's going to change.
Yeah.
And you got to roll with it sometimes, you know, and just know that if you made it through that past stuff, you can make it through anything else. That's true.
That's right.
Some things are bigger than others, but you got this. You know, we got this. So I would like to now mention if anybody would like to have a card drawn out of our inner oracle self-discovery cards, now would be a time to put your name in. Mm-hmm. See, we have such a good time talking. We could go on and on forever. I know that. But I look at the clock. I say, wow. We're getting there. Wendy, sorry, go ahead.
I know exactly where you're going next, but I was just going to say, it was funny. It's just been a long day. I'm tired. I'm feeling kind of beat. So beforehand, I was just thinking, okay, we need to make sure we get at least 30 minutes in. We got to get 30 minutes of some good chat, good content in. And every single time, we don't have a problem. We keep going and going. And I know it's mostly, well, I was going to say I can rant, but Dr. Hunter has also been fantastic, which is great topics, points. But I know exactly where we're going next. And
I love these conversations. I think it's great. You know, off the top of the show, Wendy, thanks for being here, Wendy, has her partner Charles listening in for the very first time. Welcome, Charles. Glad you're here. And so she asked if Charles could have a card drawn for him this evening. So, Michael, I'm going to pull for Wendy to get us started. And then if you would pick a card for Charles, you know, and be on deck, that would be great. So for you, Wendy, I have number 23, meaning and purpose. Oh, a little synchronicity here in our conversation, I think, again. The meaning of life is built upon values and beliefs and remains constant. The purpose of life is the action plan for the meaning of life. The purpose can change. A sense of purpose always evolves. The question is not, what is the purpose of life? Rather, it's, what's the purpose of my life? True fulfillment comes when embracing your heart's desire with both meaning and a renewed sense of purpose to fulfill that meaning. This card can also relate to the meaning or purpose of a specific situation or the lack thereof. So that's a great affirmation for you, Wendy, because we know you're on it, but just a little reminder thing there. So,
And what was the face value on that one again?
That's number 23 in the spirituality suit, meaning and purpose.
All right. And so I pulled number 38, open-mindedness.
Yeah.
An open mind is sensible and grounded. An open mind avoids preconceived notions, especially ones that are based in a personal agenda, a pet theory, or a preferred belief. An open mind is not gullible or credulous. Rather, an open mind thinks critically and searches for additional possibilities. It absorbs knowledge and searches for credible solutions and conclusions. So, Charles, I hope that resonates with you.
And we have up first, after that little, you know, start to it, Dr. Edward, this is for you, number 40, relationships. Healthy relationships are interdependent and win-win. They're not dependent or codependent. Accept others for who they are and not for what they believe. Don't be judgmental. I honestly have to work on that all the time. It's true. Otherwise, end the relationship regardless of who it's with. For healthy relationships, we must add more than we subtract. This card can refer to a healthy or toxic relationship or to the relationship of one thing to another. Now, when I say I deal with being judgmental, it's not at a soul level, not at all. When I sit with clients, I don't have judgment, zero. Spirit reminds me of this all the time. It's really difficult sometimes when you're navigating through life and dealing with difficult people just on your daily, you know, daily routines. You go, man, what's going on here? Is it the planets? You know, so that's what I mean by I deal with judgment sometimes. You know, it's like, whoa. And then I have to check in with myself and say, well, I took an outing. I met Susan at the market one day. On my way there, I watched two people go through stop signs, two people enter a circle without even looking at traffic. And I got to the market and I said, Susan, I don't think this is a good day to be driving. Like, and I'm not getting angry here, but I'm thinking maybe I should stay home. Sure enough, on my way home, I saw somebody else run a red light and I said, yeah, I'm going home.
Yeah. So, you know, to avoid, you know, the road rage and the irritation that inevitably arise, sometimes
that's
it's
right.
A fun little experiment to think, well, maybe they're saving the world. You know, they have something they have to beat to. It's Jason Bourne. He's on the way to a mission. He's got to run that red light to save lives. So I'm going to cut some slack, but I hate to do this again to you, but can I get that card one more time from you, Dr.
Sure. Number 40, relationships and
relationships.
Life skills suit.
Thank you.
And you, for you, Michael, choose one for Dr. Jeff.
Yep, Dr. Jeff.
Glad you're here, Jeff.
And Dr. Jeff, I had pulled wild card number 7, hope, a great one. And I think, I don't know that we pulled this one in a little while, but hope lives deep within and inspires the human spirit to continue and expand. Hope in and of itself does not create life. Rather, hope desires life. Hope is the root of curiosity, of interest, invention, and yearning for more. Even when all feels lost and futile, hope is resurrected by a change of beliefs and core values. Safeguard your hope, for it is the first and last failsafe of your existence. Do not promote false hope, nor encourage codependent hope.
You know, that resonates with our discussion in many ways tonight, Michael. You know, it's when you have that hope, and again, that comes from your spirit, you know, and your soul, if you will, and how we move forward. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's in transition. I like it. Ronaldo is next that I can see in the chat. Number 9 for you, Ronaldo, empowerment. Taking your power back is literally all-powerful and absolutely priceless. It alone is the solution, in principle, for virtually every problematic circumstance in your life, from a bad relationship to spiritual harassment. Retaining your power means to retain your wholeness. When you are whole, you're empowered. Empower others by doing no harm and doing right. Share the best of yourself. Sharing the best of yourself is encouraging and uplifting to yourself and others. I like that one. It's an awesome reminder. Empowerment. So it's taking your power back, and that even, not just even, but especially when you're in transition, is you have a right to be in change. You have a right to make new decisions for yourself. You have, you're empowered to do that. It's not, we're not the center of the universe. However, we are autonomous in our identity and with the right to make decisions that are suitable to us, mm-hmm. provided, again, that they don't do harm and you know that you're doing the right thing. So, and everybody has to check in with themselves on that regard. But I think very many people hold themselves back. I know we talked a little bit about this last week, but we hold ourselves back for fear of losing what we have or the people and the connections with those people. But I'd like to remind everybody that sometimes it just takes one to step up and even make a small change that others start to follow. And so that's what we can all kind of remember, I think.
Well, and remember too, it is about, it's about that deliberate intent, but sometimes a person will not be ready to hear a message when they initially hear it. Sometimes they need to hear it again years later. And you just remember that even if somebody's heard it before, if you're out there, in a healthy way, you're not giving unsolicited advice, but you're sharing these ideas and things, maybe somebody will hear this or hear part of the discussion in the moment they need to, and it'll click in that moment because everything's lined up right. But
well, I like that. And Renato said, great, thanks very much. Sometimes the 180-degree contrarian approach is needed. Yes, indeed. That's true. as a quick little story before we close, my kids were really young in elementary school, and I got really tired of all the birthday parties and the expensive cards. So I got my kids one day to make a card. They said, oh, Mom, nobody makes cards. I said, well, you give it a go. Just give it a go. Make something cool. We'll get some sparkles. Make cards. Well, even though they were feeling a little bit uncomfortable, before you know it, that school year, everybody was competing. All the kids were competing to who could make the best birthday card. So it saved parents a lot of money. That's stepping up to make a change. I really enjoyed tonight again, Michael. We'll decide on another topic next week, but I hope everybody joins us again and more. Tell your friends, and we really appreciate the conversation and the chat. Thanks for that. It's awesome, the participation.
Oh, yeah. It definitely adds something to the broadcast. It adds something to those that can listen to it later too. So thank you for everyone joining us tonight. And been a great topic. We've covered a lot of different aspects of managing these transitions, kind of expanding on a discussion last week. And like Dr. Henner said, we're going to have a great topic for you next week. And until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Good night, everybody.